they let the married nurses out in September of 45, and then it was spring of 46 when I got out, and then soon came here.
Now, tell me, when did you join the military? When did you go into the Army?
Well, I signed up in 1942.
42.
But in 1944 when I went on active duty.
Okay.
And in the meantime, again, that's when I started working full-time with the back the city schools again and the maintenance department, because they needed somebody that, well, could do what I was familiar with the work like I was, and with all of the schools, because I'd been to all of them, repairing plumbing and opening up sewers and all sorts of things. And I went with the understanding that I might work 3 days, and I might work 3 months or three, at least until I went into the service.
Uh-huh. And as soon as you got out of the service, you started at here.
Yeah, got out in, April, May, and then went back to Connecticut. My wife's home was in Connecticut. And so I went to Fort Devens, Massachusetts, to be discharged. Then we spent some time with her folks, and then traveled cross country and came here. And that, that summer, I started. I took organic chemistry here on the campus, and took a year of organic chemistry in 9 weeks. That was intense, all day. 8 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon.
Oh, boy.
And we were living up at Mission Beach, and I'd take the trolley in and catch the bus out here. But I got a lot of studying done on the way. But we did have a car at that. I hadn't had a car until after we were married. I never even had a bicycle growing up, but couldn't afford
really?
One.
Well, you didn't need one in the military either.
No.
When you got back here to San Diego, then did your wife go off to work as a nurse, as a trained nurse? I would imagine she probably would have.
She went to work with the public health department. Well, she worked for Dr. West, an orthopedic surgeon, for a while, and then she worked in the health department. And also as part of her health department assignment, they manned the campus laboratory school. So she was a campus lab school nurse and lectured to the student teachers and students.
Mm-hmm.
But when she would talk to the students and sort of exemplify the teaching for the practice teachers who would observe and so on.
Mm-hmm. The rest of the questions I wanted to ask you have to do with San Diego State College and University, and then your work after retirement.
Okay.
Do you want to go on right now and continue on with the interview, or do you want
to
set up a separate one?
It's up to you. I don't know.
We've been at it for about almost 2.5, almost 2 hours.
Okay, well, we could do it again. I don't mind coming back.
Let's go ahead and we'll bring this one to a close.
Okay.
And then we'll just go ahead and we'll go next door and we'll set up another one. It probably will take another hour, I would imagine, maybe an hour and a half to finish through all the rest of the questions, because I have questions for you about your teaching here. That's important. It's going to take...
Right. Yeah.
That's not a little piece of information. That's pretty important. That's an awful lot of work.
Yeah.
So you did your work for your...
Well, I knew what he knew
PhD
about...
at Scripps.
Grunion and people who had published on them. I talked to them about Grunion, and I was going to actually work on the ecology of Grunion predators, and what would prey on the Grunion and what the Grunion ate.
Mm-hmm.
And in examining the Grunion stomachs, I was didn't find what don't tend to eat while they're spawning. But
so there wasn't
I was
much
finding
of a chance.
Parasites.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't get the parasites identified. And so, of course, I was writing, getting involved with parasites, and even though I was supposed to be a vertebrate zoologist, I wrote to the Dr. Pratt, who was by this time at Oregon State, because I'd taken parasitology from him at Idaho. He said, "Looked like you got something good going down there. So why don't you do your dissertation on parasites of the Grunion, come up and take your degree with me?" Well, with an invitation like that, who could say no?
Could pass it out. Yeah, it's wonderful.
So,
how many Grunion again? 10,000.
10,000. Yeah. Well, that was.
And those are all caught off the beach at
during
at
two consecutive 5,000 each of two consecutive run periods. Then, after that, and even into the next year, we took seines and were out along the beaches trying to see if we could find those fish that had the clipped fins. So we got groups of students, faculty from here and all. We went to the very down as far as Ensenada, up to San Pedro. Catching Grunion and looking at each one, see if they had a fin clip. If not, we'd throw them back in.
Did you find very many? With
all right back in La Jolla area.
Really?
Yeah.
It must have been quite a loss to predators, though. I mean, the ones that had clipped fins.
Well, it just shows that. Well, we got the recoveries, but they were all back in the La Jolla area.
Oh, I see.
We found
you didn't
that
find
they,
them elsewhere.
What he wanted to show was that they. Really don't migrate a lot. And then I found that in my parasite work too. There was a question, the ones in San Diego Bay, do they go on out to the ocean in between times or not? Well, the parasites are quite different. The incidence and so on is very different from the ones in the bay versus the ones, in the bay side of the Coronado Strand and on the ocean side of the Coronado Strand. The parasites are different.
Never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
Your bolo or bola or whatever it's called is a parasite, isn't it? Isn't that
Giardia?
Model? Okay, I had heard about this, about how you make these clay models of the parasites.
At the end of the teaching, I was able to have a different, have the appropriate bola type for each lecture in parasitology.
Oh, you have that many of them?
Yeah.
Oh, I...
Quite a few. In fact, I've written that up. What do they call this thing? The Retirement Association postscripts.
Mm-hmm.
This next issue is asking for articles dealing with creativity. So I wrote up this thing on these. It even got it in the Aztec once.
I think it's wonderful. It's a good looking bolo. I like it.
Well, my son's of course in business up in Northern California. This is all wheel thrown pottery, but he has the clay and the kilns and so on. And way back in 1973, I think, first one, he said, "Here, Dad, there's some clay. Have some fun." And so I modeled a tapeworm, perglotta, and a trematode or whatever. And he fired them and glazed them. That was the start. And now all my parasitologist friends are equipped with them because they're accurate enough. You can put them in an exam for identification. It's good as showing a picture in a book. And they use them at UCLA, at UC Riverside. Mm-hmm. A fellow at Riverside gets them and gives them his prize students each year.
They're teaching aides and their prizes
sure.
as well. That's wonderful.
And put magnets on the back and use them as refrigerator magnets.
One question before I forget, and before the tape isn't going to run out quite yet, but before I forget
we're still on.
Yeah, we're still on.
All right.
I turned it back on when you started talking about your doctorate.
All right.
When you were doing your work at Scripps, then did you have much contact with the Hubs?
Oh, sure, of course. I've been out in the field
Laura,
with them.
Laura and Carl Hubs.
Oh, yes.
Because they were examining a different aspect of...
He was active with the Fellows of the National History Museum. That was the Fellows Society was one place where we could the scientists in the San Diego area could get together once a month. The people from Scripps, San Diego State, the zoo, the Natural History Museum, and so on. And in the later 40s, the fellows were interested in San Diego ecology and conservation, and I was very active with that, and also being on the staff here. There was talk about doing something with Mission Bay. So Carl Hubbs and four or five of us met at Mrs. Kendall's house one day, and there's some little part of the park that's Kendall Estuary or whatever they call it, Kendall Marsh, I guess it is, over by Crown Point. We started the talk about how to at least save the wildlife and natural history of Mission Bay.
It's very interesting that you bring that up. What did the naturalists of San Diego think about the development?
Well, we wanted, if something was to happen, we wanted it done as with the least disturbance of the ecology as possible. It was the sort of thing that I think we feel as though something's bound to happen. So it was a matter of trying to hit some happy mediums.
Did you have any suggestions to the city as to how to mitigate some of the problems that were going to happen as far as destroying some of the environment?
Well, yeah. One big concern was the loss of eelgrass and some of the natural island areas. And I remember Carl Hubbs built what he called La Patera, the duck, or something or another. There's a kind of a looks like a lighthouse thing in that northeastern part of the bay. It was an area that was initially had envisioned even maybe three or four little isolated islands. But anyhow, it never, I don't think the city ever got developed quite as much as they had hoped to, and we didn't get quite as much conservation in as we wanted.
I can't imagine that there was very much citizen interest in maintaining the ecology of the bay either.
Not really, unfortunately.
No, not back then. No. That's something I wasn't intending on asking you, but you brought it up. We've got a little bit of information on the development of Mission Bay, which I think is very interesting.
There's Mission Bay brochure, development of Mission Bay. Was put out at one time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good pictures, some before and after pictures.
Yeah, we've got things like that. Yeah. Glenn Rick was the architect.
He and Hubbs and somebody else.
Or Rick Glenn.
Anyhow, there were five of us that met at Mrs. Kendall's, because she was talking about deeding her property to some. We didn't know it was going to be San Diego State that was going to would pick it up, the Natural History Museum, Scripps, or
is this still a natural
it.
Reserve part
yes.
of the bay? I didn't know such an area existed. I thought it had all been developed.
Well, on Crown Point, on the east side of it, is that beach, I forget what they call it, Mission Bay Park, maybe Crown Point Park. There's grassy area and a lot of picnicking there. And then just north of that is the cyclone fence and the green marshy area, and which is the Kendall Marsh. And that is deeded to the city.
I'll have to make sure I get over there one of these days and take a look at it. We kayak around over that way.
Okay.
Because I don't know.
Well, you have to go on high tide to get up into that, over that marshy area.
Oh. We probably wouldn't get into it. I'm just curious about where it is.
It's on the map. If you get a map of the bay, and then let's see, with the hardwood lumberyard people, owned the property just north of hers, between her place and campland on the bay. And I think a lot of that was, Margaret starts with an S, I believe. It seems a lot of that has been deeded and is supposed to be left in its natural state.
Well, that's refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Then, of course, out of the mouth of the bay, initially we had the bridge between Ocean Beach and Mission Beach, and the streetcars went across that. We can talk sometime, too, about the gray whales.
That's right. I know. I noticed that
on
your...
I worked with Gray Whale, Ray Gilmore on that.
You conducted 50-plus whale hunts or whale watches out of San Diego and Mission Bay.
I've been on about 75 of them, according to my notes.
Okay, well, let me put a star next to that one, and I'll ask you next time. I think right now I'm just going to go ahead and turn off the tape recorder.
Okay.